Chapter 5 Osiris Base.
So, Kali, I just think we need to be clear on this, said Wagid. He was a tall, lanky man with large eyes, a thick mustache, and dark hair that curled tight against his scalp. It's been a while. We've all been polite about it, but it's time for the truth. You're up here because you need the money. What, to keep your folks in some kind of home for abusive parents?
The other people at the breakfast table laughed. She pushed a curl away from her face and managed a tired smile.
Not exactly, she said, already feeling the exhaustion from a lifetime of previous explanations.
Henri shook a piece of bread at her.
You want to put them in a home?
At 63, the bald man was supposedly one of the oldest people on the moon. He'd been at Osiris longer than anyone else, having turned down at least 3 promotions.
No, she said. Of course not. Of course not?
Ismay laughed. She had long black braids and a flawless complexion. She dipped her head at her husband.
When Wagid first showed me your paperwork, I saw the name and thought it was a joke.
Another chuckle skipped around the room. The dining hall slash meeting room was one of the biggest spaces in the Osiris base. If not for the lack of windows, it could have been any large family room on Earth. Long, spidery plants hung in each corner, spots of bright color against the soft pastel walls. It had taken Callie a little over a week to match names to faces and make them stick. Much of the information had been in her orientation packets, but it had seemed like a waste of time. She'd wanted to avoid getting too attached to anyone. But she hadn't been able to avoid it. Callie usually got assigned to work with Jake and Daniel, but she'd done a few shifts with Thomas and Megan, the base's de facto medic. Wagid, the head caretaker for their base, was married to Ismay. Old Henri had his bare scalp, Anna was the red-headed white woman, and finally Mikhail, the Siberian ox. Tessa had known them all by name on first sight. She'd studied all the staff records in the packets. Of course. Somehow over the past month, she'd managed to become more enthusiastic about their job.
My parents are,
Callie began. She thought about the words on her tongue, traded them out for new ones.
They're good people. They just love their work a little too much.
And hate their daughter, apparently,
Jake said. He gave Callie a quick wink and half a smile.
It's the loving use of my parents that gives it away, said Daniel.
A large bowl of oatmeal made its way across the table, followed by a plate of toast. A pitcher of pressure-cooked coffee traveled defiantly in the other direction. Callie took a slice of toast and studied the faces around her. They all looked relaxed and happy and self-assured. She turned her attention back to her toast.
To be honest, she said, not looking up from her plate, I got off easy.
Jake banged his palm on the table, bouncing the salt and pepper shakers into the air.
Siblings! Knew it!
So, Ismay asked, what did they get?
Callie's shoulders loosened a little.
My older brother is Texas Washington, she said. My elder sister is Georgia, and my little brother is Michigan.
That, Henri said after a moment, is truly awful. I might need to kill your parents for you, said Wagid.
Anna slid from the kitchen with a jug of milk. Even with the top half of her jumpsuit tied in a bulky ring around her waist, she moved so smoothly the milk barely rippled.
What were they thinking? They work on maps all the time, said Callie. They think place names are beautiful.
A chime sounded over the comm, and Wagid checked his tablet.
It's Tony at Iran. Looks official.
He stood up, brushed his mustache with his fingertips, and zipped his jumpsuit a little higher.
Right back,
He gave Izmi a kiss on the cheek and ducked out into the hallway. Daniel poured some milk onto his oatmeal. His jumpsuit was black with a polished white collar rather than caretaker gray, although he still wore the Osiris patch on his shoulder.
How often did you get beat up in school? Enough, I'd suggest no one try it on the moon.
Another laugh rolled around the table. Mikhail, the thick Russian, gave her a tight smile. He'd shown up for breakfast wearing boxers, a tank top, and boots, his usual breakfast outfit. The chuckles were replaced by the sounds of breakfast. Forks on plates, butter knives scraping on toast, spoons ringing inside coffee cups. Wagid came back in, dipping his head under the door frame. Some of the morning cheer had fallen from his face. He held his tab in his hands and his fingers drummed against the edge.
Jake, are you pulling a joke with what's-his-name, Chuck?
Jake looked up from his coffee.
Joke? Something early for Halloween, maybe? Tony got a weird call last night. He was wondering if you two had something to do with it.
Not that I know of.
Who's Chuck? Murmured Callie.
Another film fanatic over at Ades,
Henri said. Tessa tried to catch a glimpse at the images on Wagid's tab.
Is there a problem?
Wagid set a finger on the tablet and flicked a file to the dining room's screen.
Christine sent out a medical alert to Aron yesterday afternoon. Three of the Hades people got hurt pretty bad out at the impact site, possibly killed.
Who was it? Asked Jake.
Debbie Garron, Mark Polk, and their new guy, the Houseman kid.
Kurt, said Callie as most of the others around the table groaned. She gave Tessa an uneasy look.
Wagid's lips tightened into a line.
Sorry. He was on the flight up with you two, wasn't he?
Callie nodded.
Sorry, he repeated.
Why are they saying possibly killed? Asked Tessa. Don't they know what's happened to them?
Christine was vague, said she was still trying to get the details right.
Of course, said Megan. She gets that call wrong and her career's over.
That boy gets scratched and her career's over, said Henri. I remember when his dad was up here. That whole rotation was one big headache.
So why am I getting the stink eye, boss?
Jake reached up to tweak his cap.
Never even seen the kid.
Tony got another call from Christine last night, said Wagid, just before midnight.
He tapped the file on the screen, and it expanded to a paused VidCom window. Callie thought the woman on the screen looked terrified. The still shot had caught her with wide eyes, her silver-streaked hair frozen in a frantic halo around her. Wagid started the file. The image shook and broke into digital static.
Dead people all around the base. I don't know how much longer the SEALs are going to hold. You've got to send help before they...
A loud whump echoed from the speakers, like something soft but very heavy being dropped, followed by a shriek of wind. Christine screamed and was yanked out of frame. The image blurred as a thin coat of frost formed over the lens.
Allah, said Izmi. They ruptured?
Wagid nodded.
That's what Tony thought at first, too.
Thought, echoed Henri.
What part of it confused him?
Their commander nodded to the screen.
Wait.
The file continued to run, showing the static, broken image from Hades' base. Nothing happened for another half minute. Then someone walked into the frame. Daniel squinted at the blurry screen.
Who is that? Is that Chuck?
Asked Anna, tilting her head. Jake shook his head.
Too thin to be Chuck.
More to the point, said Wagid. It's too thin to be someone in a suit. So how are they walking around if their base just ruptured?
Another figure wandered into frame. This one staggered a bit, and the image pixelated for a moment. Then a third figure entered the shot. All three of them milled in the room for a few moments before one stumbled away. The file ended and reset to Christine's face. "If there are still people walking around inside," said Daniel, "it couldn't have been a rupture."
"You could still walk around for a good minute," said Megan from the far end of the table. "Vacuum doesn't kill you instantly."
"If you were prepared," said Henri, "you've got maybe 15 or 20 seconds if you're not ready for it."
Callie cleared her throat. "Maybe they just had too much to drink. They're kind of stumbling a bit."
"Nobody knows," said Wagid with a shrug. "Tony can't raise them from Aron. Neither can we. There's an auto signal, but no one's answering. None of their LPS trackers have switched on, so they're all still in the base. He's deferring the next decision to me as a ranking company man in the north."
Jake looked at his boss.
"This some kind of joke?
You tell me, Jake."
The younger man shook his head.
"Nothing to do with me. Might be Chuck on his own. He likes all those old disaster films. Maybe he talked them into acting something out."
"She doesn't look like she's acting," said Tessa.
Jake studied the screen.
"Isn't that kind of the whole point of acting?"
"Christine isn't the type to play a joke, though," said Ismi. "Especially not if someone's died." "Have a lot of people died up here?"
Callie asked.
"Millions of them," deadpanned Jake.
"Lots of dead people, yeah, but how many people have died?"
Wagid scratched the back of his head with both hands.
"Unless I'm forgetting someone, there hasn't been a fatality on the moon in about 8 years. A few weeks after I first arrived, autumn of 34, a prospector tipped his buggy in a crater. It rolled and lost a window."
Kelly waved a hand at the screen.
"Maybe she's just not dealing well with losing someone. Grief can make you do weird things."
"Or maybe their base ruptured," said Henri. "She'll look like it, and it'd explain why they're not answering."
"You think they're all just holding their breath there at the end?"
Ismi said.
"Power the camera," said Jake. "You only see what it wants you to see."
"So what did you guys do?" asked Megan.
"I repeat," said Jake, "I had nothing to do with this, but it's not like any of this would be hard to pull off. Drop something to make a loud noise. Pull Christine out of the camera frame by her belt. Wind and the frost could be a CO2 extinguisher."
"But you had nothing to do with it."
Jake held up his palms.
"Not a thing, boss, I swear. Just pointing out a likely explanation."
Wagid ran the file again. They all studied it. It reset to Christine's terrified face again. Ismi glanced from the still frame to her husband.
"Why do you think she sounded so panicked about there being dead people around the base?"
Wagid shrugged again.
"I don't know. None of this makes much sense to me."
"What was there before this?" asked Daniel. "Why'd you start it there?"
"Nothing but static. 2-minute transmission with 67 seconds of usable data. Tony thinks Hades may have an issue with their main antenna."
"Did anyone try cleaning it up?" asked Tessa.
"This is the cleaned-up version. It was a really low-power signal."
"I could take another pass at it if you like. I took a few communications courses."
"Be my guest."
Wagid split a copy off the file and flung it over to Tessa's tablet. She expanded it on the table and started poking at it.
"Maybe they were screwing around," mused Callie. "Trying different things to work through grief and didn't realize the camera was on."
"Maybe," said Wagid. He scratched the back of his head again. "Okay, I'm going to give Tony the go-ahead to go check it out. We'll hold off contacting Gordon or Discorp until we know something for sure. No point declaring an emergency if it just turns out everybody got stinking drunk over there last night."
Ismi frowned.
"Tony's going to be furious if he loses a crew for the day because they're all hungover."
"I'll be pissed if they're all hungover,"
Wagid sighed.
"Anna, you just lost your day off. Go out with Megan and Thomas."
"What?"
You can have Wednesday. He nodded at the screen. I need to stay here and see how much paperwork I'll have to shuffle around to save all their jobs.